I requested their permission to Honorable
Chair, honorable members, guests, my name is Bianca Belescu. I'm head of Department Electricity Infrastructure Planning, responsible for energy and demand side management at NERSA.
Thank you. Honorable Chair, honorable members.
My name is Bruce Mosido. I'm a financial analyst at NERSA. I'm responsible with the energy efficiency evaluation and monitoring and the quality of energy efficiency program.
My name is Nyoni. I'm a efficiency engineer at NERSA, responsible for energy efficiency and demand side management.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I trust that the team is ready and for all of the answers, because especially Bianca, from 2002, she has been working with this energy efficiency and demand-side management. Our presentation is really going to cover the 12 items. We will ensure that we stick to the 20 minutes that we have been allocated. NERSA, I always have to start by saying that NERSA is really a creature of a statute that does or does not do everything that it does or does not do based on the legislation that governs us. And I think in this particular instance, it's the Electricity Regulation Act that requires us to ensure certain things as far as the facilitation of investment and the promotion of energy efficiency. But coupled with that, there are other documents that also guide us, the white paper on energy and the energy efficiency strategy which was developed, the pricing policy, and some of the other documents that the department has issued, like the energy efficiency and DSM through a standard offer. And the latest documentation that guides our actions is a new generation regulations. I also have to say that even on the other industries, the petroleum pipelines and the gas, there are requirements for implementation of energy efficiency, contrary to what really has been said, that there is nothing that's being done on that side of things. However, our presentation today is only going to be looking at the electricity side of the energy efficiency. Our vision, I would like to remind everyone else that we strive to be a world-class energy regulator, and our mission is really as dictated by the different statutes that we work with. And the principle that guides us, I think we always repeat this every time we hear, that it's the rule of law, the transparency, the consistency.
If you don't mind, for today.
Okay, for the sake, we will do that, Chairperson. But the one that I really want to get into is that what we are going to be basing our presentation on is really our regulatory functions, and I'm highlighted ones that are specific to energy efficiency. The second bullet point really talks about the setting and approval of tariffs and price structures. And these tariffs that we approve include money that we set aside for both ESCOM and the municipalities to implement energy efficiency and demand side management measures. The second one is when we set the license conditions, once these have been set, we also have a requirement for them to comply with the energy efficiency standards that would have imposed onto them, and some of the requirements that we put for our demand side management. And really the last part is that when we approve the prices and tariffs and set the license conditions, we always want to ensure that they in their processes also promote the use of diverse energy sources and are energy efficient. I will give over to Bianca to really go into the details of our presentation. Bianca.
Thank you. I will start with the concept of energy efficiency in order to have clarity in the rest of our presentation. Energy efficiency refers to the rate of systems used for energy output to its energy input, or to the overall energy used by end users through the efficient technologies, equipment, and processes. Demand-side management is another category which falls under energy efficiency, and it refers to utility programs related to load shifting, load management, load reduction, or utility-focused interventions reducing the demand and energy consumption. Demand market participation or demand response program is a subcategory of the Masai management program that provides incentives to customers to curtail loss at a short notice. What is the rationale of energy efficiency and demand side management? First of all, there are economic benefits. It's a lower cost and generator plant, lower lead time to implement the measure, financial savings, which constitutes of deferment of capital expenditures for new capacity, better utilization of national resources. The second part of benefits is environmental benefits. It includes lower environmental impact, lower use of coal, water, low greenhouse gas emissions. It contributes to energy security. It has social benefits such as job creation, increased access to affordable energy services. And last, sustainability. It changes consumer behavior, which was discussed earlier. The remainder of my presentation is going to cover introduction and achievements and recommendations for improvement of the energy efficiency implementation in South Africa. Energy efficiency demand-side regulatory policy was established by NER, the predecessor of the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, following the publication of the white paper on energy policy, and it was introduced in the electricity sector in 2004. The introduction occurred in 2005 through the administration of ESCOM. This framework of 2004 is in the process of revision pending finalization of the new standard of policy from the Department of Energy, which was published for public consultation in 2008. The purpose of the presentation is to inform the Parliament Portfolio Committee on Energy about achievements to date in the implementation of energy efficiency in the electric sector and provide recommendations for further improvement. Energy efficiency mechanisms and funding. The funding is currently done through the electricity tariff or regulated revenue of ESCOM, or it is utility-based energy efficiency and demand-side management. An obligation to utility to invest a percentage of their revenue in the energy efficiency program through the multi-year price determination. That is multi-year MIPD-1 and MIPD-2 for ESCOM in the last 6 years. Setting energy savings targets. Ring-fencing of energy efficiency and demand-side management funds within ESCOM. Measurement and verification of the demand and energy savings achieved. Clawback of the energy efficiency and demand-side management funds in case of non-achievement of the target in the next price review process. Annual report on technical and financial performance provided to NERSA and analyzed by NERSA. And annual audits of energy efficiency and demand side management funds, which audits have been established since 2006. Energy efficiency determination process from regulatory perspective includes several pillars used in the energy efficiency regulatory process. The first one is planning. The mission of larger energy efficiency plan as part of the multi-year price determination. That plan is submitted by ESCOM. Review of regulatory rules on energy efficiency as part of the multi-year price determination. That regulatory rules are published and for public consultation they include rules specifically related to energy efficiency. Public consultation on the energy efficiency rules, programs and costs, also as part of the MIPD process. Regulatory analysis of energy efficiency programs. Program type, cost, impact, timelines, targets, etc. Regulatory determination of the size and targets of the energy efficiency fund. Measurement and verification of achieved savings. Monitoring and reporting, quarterly and annual reports are provided by ESCOM IDM. annual report on technical and financial performance of ESCOM IGM, annual audit of energy efficiency in the market management fund, as I mentioned, established in 2006, and the reconciliation of revenue with energy savings and clawback of some funding, if applicable. I'm moving to highlight some of the energy achievements today, and there is a probability that I might read some of the reports of ESCOM, but mine is more of a summary. 974 projects have been implemented, measured, and verified since inception in 2005. The accumulated peak demand savings are 2,604 megawatts, and that is equivalent to 5 generators of about 600 megawatts each, or about 3,000 megawatts. Very conservative estimate of the accumulated peak energy savings is about 20,000 gigawatt hours, and an estimate of the deferred capital, again very conservative estimate of the deferred capital expenditure is about 13 billion rand. And in order to compare this 13 billion rand, I would like to say that over the last 6 years, the cost of energy efficiency programs is about 5-6 billion rand. So the actual benefit is 5.78 billion rand to the country. The verified cumulative demand savings and targets are illustrated on this figure in 2005, and you can see that the uptake was rather slow and the targets were very low, relatively lower. But in the last 5-6 years, the demand side management and energy efficiency of South Africa has accelerated substantially. In terms of energy achievement today, energy efficiency and demand side management have been incorporated in the integrated resource planning process of the country. The inclusion of energy efficiency as a resource option in the development of the IRP has been initiated in 2002, and previously it has been initiated by ESCOM in the ICEP planning process. So National Integrated Resource Plan 1, 2, and 3, as well as the latest Integrated Resource Plan 2010, developed by the Department of Energy, that included demand side management and energy efficiency options. The approved IRP 2010 for implementation includes cumulative amounts of 3,420 megawatts demand saving in the next 20 years, or about 171 megawatts demand saving per annum. NERSA supports the expansion of the portfolio of programs and energy efficiency initiatives developed by ESCOM and by stakeholders, and various proposals by stakeholders. The current energy efficiency programs include, but they are not limited to this program, EFL light, LED lighting, showerhead, solar water heaters, heat pump, process optimization. The new programs under regulatory assessment at present are small-scale renewable energy projects to be included for funding from the Energy Efficiency and Demand Side Management Fund, waste heat recovery system, and also we are busy developing rules for demand market participation and demand market response. In terms of economic development, 10 million EFLs were installed nationwide in 2011 and 12, and 187,000 units of solar water heaters have been rolled out in the same period. Job creation, a number of people employed to install energy efficiency projects as well as for measurement and verification have been initiated, hence energy efficiency contributes to job creation in the country. Increased access to affordable energy services, in that regard, unfortunately I don't have the number, there is the installation of low pressure solar water heaters in RGP houses that actually don't have electricity, but now they have hot water. I'm moving to our recommendations or ways of energy efficiency improvement. Clear government policies and clearer government policies and institutional responsibilities will improve governance of energy efficiency. Legislative clarification of the role and obligations of the National Energy Regulator in energy efficiency would also contribute to better implementation of the energy efficiency. Coordination between government departments, government policies and institutional mechanisms could be improved in order to achieve greater integration of the implementation. Diversification of the incentives could be another way of encouraging people to move to energy efficiency. Targets should be set for energy efficiency improvement in various sectors. Achievements should be monitored against the target. Institutional oversight to guarantee cost effectiveness of energy efficiency. And one very important point is information mechanisms. Data collection, analysis, and development of indicators and dissemination of information aiming to help the market to recognize the energy efficiency product. Independent system of the next recommendation is related to the draft legislation for the creation of independent system and market operators and demand market participation and reform program. GFP, load shifting, load reductions and intractable loads are inherent part of the system operator function and real-time balancing of supply and demand. Therefore, this problem should remain under the control of the system operator. Hasn't been provided by the draft legislation. Municipal distributors should be given targets by government policy to undertake the demand side management and energy efficiency program. The portfolio of MNP team should be expanded to include small-scale growth-based economic empowerment consultancy, thereby contributing to economic development and job creation. And our last recommendation is that the measurement and verification function should be independent of the fund administrator reporting directly to the Department of Energy or NERSA in order to create more credibility and confidence in the energy saving results. Thank you.
Thank you, Shepard. And the last point really that I would want to stress, I know we have other additional slides, is that contrary to some of the assertions that have been made that there's no information around what is the situation with the energy regions, we would like to offer different perspectives that there is information or there is data around what is happening in the country, but to package it now to be the information that the different parties require is a question of just manipulating the data, and we'll get the information. We are of the view that we are ready at this point to come up with improvements in the current energy efficiency policies and legislation. Thank you, Jefferson.
Okay. Thank you very much,
Mr.
Kavianka. In the second last slide, did I hear you correctly when you say those functions, load shifting, DFT, load production, should remain within the system operator function, but they are not in the current bid. It's not bid.
It's not explicitly incorporated in the current bid. Actually, demand side management and energy efficiency is not clear where it is going to be located after the independent system and market operator is established.
Okay. Fine for now, thank you. Shall we move the speech to Numsa?
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. My name is Goody Aru. I'm from the National Union of Better Workers of South Africa, and I work in the union's parliamentary office in Cape Town. I have a colleague here of mine, Mr. Dina Sekwebo, who's the National Education Coordinator. He's at the back, and he'll probably join us in discussions if there are any questions put to the union. I'm going to go straight into our presentation. Just a short introduction, and I think if you have been here since yesterday, so we're going to come in from a totally different angle. It has a very social orientation about our presentation and the perspective that we're going to come from. So there's nothing really technical about our presentation, but it does seek to address some of the issues about participation and whether civil society is being given an adequate space, particularly in areas around energy efficiency and policy making. Just as by way of introduction, we've noted, and I think very quickly I can probably dispense with some of this, South Africa's ranking as 13th in the world as a carbon emitter. The obligations that we made at, well, actually some of the obligations that the government made at COP15 in Copenhagen about reducing our carbon footprint. But I think the key thing to note is that the energy efficiency strategy of 2005 actually takes its mandate from the 1998 white paper on energy policy, and you had a national target for energy efficiency improved of 12% by 2015. So I think it must be clear about where the energy efficiency strategy of 2005 takes its mandate, and that was from the 1998 white paper. Just to continue with our introduction, we noted that there was the first review in 2008. And in that review, the minister indicated that government had entered into an energy efficiency accord with some 40 large industrial and commercial consumers. They did report in that in the assessment. I think there was a report that they had made some significant savings, somewhere in the region of about 9 billion over 3 years. We were told last year that there is going to be a revised strategy, and that would be out for public comment at the end of 2011. But we've been searching the website high and low, and we've made some attempt to try and see if we could get a document. We haven't as yet got the document. We're not even aware that the document has been put out for public comment. In any event, what we want to comment on is we want to comment on the energy efficiency accord. And we have a number of concerns here. Firstly, the exclusion of both labor and civil society formation from participation in the energy efficiency accord. And the dominance of the business in what has explicitly, and we even say this, it has been explicitly been described as voluntary rather than mandatory nature. This confirms a number of our fears. The one is that voluntary nature of the cost. It doesn't place any obligation on business to implement energy efficiency measures. And so long as industries are made to comply with the minimum regulatory standards, as far as emission levels are concerned, the chance of further investment in energy efficiency projects will remain as just that, it will remain voluntary. And the court has looked at discourage of business as usual approach, and leaves energy efficiency almost entirely in the hands of the private sector. And we've seen this. The National Business Initiative and Business Unity of Africa have got complete control over the accord. Convened the business of the accord and includes the government, an energy efficiency technical committee was formed with NBI playing the management and secretariat role. And the EETC is chaired by one of the signatory companies, and the deputy chair is provided by the Department of Mineral and Energy. There's absolutely no involvement or participation in this accord from civil society formations, or for that matter, labor. In its assessment of the court, the NBI and BUSA have made several recommendations, calling on government to ensure that they want more incentives, they want the efforts to be taken into account in the planned power conservation program, they want more high-level government engagement, support of research and development, and skills. That's what we find is that seemingly the support comes on one side of the fence, with business setting the agenda and government showering blessings with all these promissory notes acknowledging that all is well and on track. No labor, no civil society information. We've heard a bit of this from other presentations about participation at a municipal level and so on, but there hasn't been anything much. Now, absence of trade union and civil society from participating in policy development, again, in August 2011, DOE briefed the Portfolio Committee on Energy on some of its work on energy efficiency and savings and energy savings. It highlighted the progress of the following projects: solar water heating, fiscal energy efficiency demand side management program, industrial energy efficiency project. There's a number of all projects, they briefed the committee on it. But in all these endeavors, World Trade Union, is hardly mentioned. In fact, the only reference that we found, and we did our research on this, the only reference that comes close to any involvement from civil society is a proposal by DOE to refer the energy efficiency communication strategy to NEDLAC social partners for consideration. That's the role that they were playing. That the communication strategy and the campaign, those are the two important things, and they refer that to NEDLAC for consideration. In any event, and with all that has happened, the union convened a workshop last year and invited DOE, and they did come. And they did speak about, well, we asked them, what about employee involvement? And they, and this is what DOE said, they gave us a little diagram here, and they said, yeah, they agree, employment involvement is very, 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 very important. And they said, these are the kind of things that they'd like to see, make energy saving commitments, assess performance, set goals, create an action plan, implement. But this is all they said, is that, you know, but how to take it forward? There wasn't anything forthcoming from that. So what we did was we conducted some interviews with our shop stewards, and we said let's get a feel from them whether companies are speaking, are they talking to labor, are they talking to the union, are they talking to our shop stewards that represent us at the level of shop stewards. And here's a response from a shop steward working at Altmine Chrome. Does your company have energy efficiency committee? Is there a structural energy committee? And the response was, yes, we do have an energy efficiency section led by the energy manager. But all the engineers and superintendents are assisting on control measures on energy consumption. The bulk structure is responsible for both energy consumption and cost. There's nothing more about union involvement. There's absolutely nothing. The second response we got from Arcelor Mittal. There they have an energy committee. He said the energy committee is at corporate level. And we're setting up one in Sunday Park, but it was there, but it sits at the level of the corporate. Doesn't really filter down to the shop. Then we got a scanned fact from one of our shop stewards. So in spite of all these things, in spite of management attitudes about this, our shop stewards and the union is still committed to participate. And we got this fact last year, and this fact, what the shop stewards said, they said, look, there are a lot of things that have happened. Our company, his company, attempts to be made to be more energy efficient. They change the globes. They look for gas leaks in the pipes. So there were attempts, and there was some involvement, but they weren't really kind of directing. They were or given a chance to kind of share their views. They were simply just giving instructions. But the important thing is that in spite of all the limitations, the union was quite prepared to participate. And there were considerable savings in this one particular company, which actually manufactured solar water heaters. So I think this was a good sign, but I think a lot more can be achieved. We then had further consultations with shops belonging to industry that falls within the scope of the energy-intensive user group. Energy-intensive user group. And those involved in some of the solar water heat manufacturing industries. And they confirmed that management sees energy efficiency as its own prerogative. So I think this notion that the union is only here to negotiate wages or substantive conditions of service and so on is a bit of a misnomer. I think we must take away from that. There are other issues that we can be involved in. And these social issues, energy efficiency is a social issue, it's an important issue. So when we interviewed them, and during COP 17, we conducted several interviews with our students attending the civil society space gathering at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. And many of them attended the World of Work Provision organized by the International Trade Union Confederation. And they confirmed that there was little interaction between them and management on issues such as energy efficiency. And we actually have these interviews on transcripts. We have them. We actually have transcripts of these interviews. And they're quite amazing. There are a lot of other things that they speak about, but our focus was just about energy efficiency and what is it and how are you interacting with management on this. And it was quite clear that it was management's prerogative. In any event, we have our own plans, and NUMSA is not prepared to sit back. And what we did was in our plans, and I'll go through them very, very quickly, but not much in detail. We said we need to review, and we must look at government policy initiatives. We need to review, there's a review of government support of solar water heating projects. We want to look at that. We want to see what's really going on here. And we've had a solar water heater summit this year. In fact, we had an international energy conference in February this year, as well as a solar water heater summit. And those were managed. And there was lots of participation from stakeholders. But this is something that we initiated, union initiated. So we got departments involved and so on. And we set up what is called an RDG, which is a research and development group, look at solar water heating. And the reason for that is because many of the solar water manufacturing companies, we have members in these companies. They work in these companies, they're manufacturing. So they see and they have first-hand knowledge of what is going on. They spoke about importation from China. And we looked even in ESCOM's survey, I think it was in, that they did in 2009, 40% import of solar water heaters, imported units, has suddenly shot up in the space of a few years to about 40%. And we see a lot of local industries actually closing up at the expense of imported units. So we're working on that. We picked up a breakdown on the number of installations up to 30th of June 2011. This is something that's work in progress as well. Implementation of regulations on energy efficiency of buildings. Again, this is important for us because we have members who manufacture these appliances labeling and so on. So we said we need to keep track of what is happening there. And for us, the important thing here is that is local content requirements are part of the program and the job created to the implementation of building standards. So if you have new building standards, new building regulations and buildings, and it's going to be new appliances, we want to ensure that you're not importing these things. We create the jobs here. And as far as possible, we develop and have the capacity to do it here. So this is important. I'm raising this because we already had, in fact, that's my colleague might share some of the information with you. We've already had one company approaching the union, actually a shop steward from the company came in and had some of the management, where a huge contract for low pressure solar water heaters has been given outside. It's been given to a company here that's not creating job but it's bringing in imported goods. Bringing in imported. Massive contract. Lumsar wrote to the procurement officer. There's no answer there yet, but I have my colleague might share some of the information with you. The review of the energy efficiency strategy, for us this is very important. We've heard from some of the presentations from the energy intensive user groups and so on about, well, there is no strategy. And that all it has is a set of objectives and aspirational, that are just aspirational. These are things that you aspire towards, but not really a strategy or a plan. We feel that there's going to be these review energy efficiency strategies. We don't want any unilateral implementation of energy efficiency programs by management. We want to make a demand for inclusion in the energy efficiency strategy of energy committees that involve the shop stewards. We'll build our technical strategy on energy efficiency, and we can discuss how savings from energy efficiency are to be shared. This is the thing. If you are going to make savings, then where are those savings going? So for us, these are important things. Okay, the carbon tax. Again, we've had a workshop on the carbon tax, and we're in the process of trying to consolidate our own policy, what would be our own policy position on the issue of the carbon tax. In the short term, we've got two research and development groups. One will look at energy efficiency and how through saving on energy costs can companies maintain existing jobs and create new ones. And for us, that's the focus of that energy group. They're made up of shop stewards, union officials, and the idea is to try and find out from and get as much information that we can from our industry where we are organized about how these savings can actually contribute to maintaining existing jobs and creating new ones. And the same with renewable energy. For us, the important thing is about establishing what we call a socially owned, parastatal and cooperative renewable energy sector, and not just where everything just belongs to the private sector. Conclusion, as indicated in many of our previous submissions of portfolio commitment in energy, LUMSA is more than willing to share its ideas of matters of energy, and is repeatedly called for involvement of all stakeholders in matters of energy production and consumption. Unless there is a commitment from all to participate, and until such time that government and the private sector become less selective on issues that they want unions and civil society to participate in, the chances of becoming energy efficient and creating a new and healthy environment will remain in the future. And that for us is important. Is that we can't go to an energy colloquium and take that stakeholder representation. Because you have a gathering of a few hundred people, that is not really stakeholder participation. You go to a big colloquium and everybody feels good. Civil society sitting there. A Tokyo, for instance, not really a platform where you can actually engage in serious debate. So for us, the thing is that they have to be a more structured approach towards this kind of engagement that we seek, and then we feel we can make some progress. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, Nusa. General Electric. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Luazi. I come from General Electric. I'm the Commercial Development Manager for Southern Africa, and I'm in the company of Tebu Odio Bing. He's the leader of the commercial development activities also for Southern Africa. We are going to talk a little bit about what we as a technology provider can contribute towards the energy efficiency debate. I am going to run quickly through the slides pertaining to what we do and try and get straight to the point. This is just an overview of us at GE. That is just to say that in the energy efficiency debate, we are more active in the technology change and the equipment efficiency side of things, not much into the behavior change. We also view that by changing technology, in a system, it is easily achievable to end energy efficiencies of up to 60%. Such as our markets, we are in everything from steel and cement industries all the way to utilities and municipalities. Interesting enough, if you analyze the energy consumption trends in Southern Africa, the transport sector and the industry sector are the highest consumers of energy. That should not be surprising at all. And as such, all of our solutions tend to be focused on both the transport sector and the industries themselves. And we have broken down the industries there, iron, steel, chemicals, and so forth. And our bouquet of solutions covers something to the tune of 97% of the sector. Now, getting into the point, to the thick of things, in the residential and commercial space, what we provide, a list of solutions, starting from lighting solutions that would be very effective in the office buildings, government office buildings, the parking lots, industry lamps. On average, our lighting solutions would use up to 75% less energy than your regular bulbs, and they last up to 10 times longer. That is a statistic that we stand by and are able to defend quite easily. In the residential and commercial space also, we do in areas where there is no electricity coverage, offer diesel generator sets. Our gensets are also quite energy efficient, something to the tune of 22% more efficient than what you pick up in the market. Hence, they tend to be slightly pricier than others. We also have energy storage batteries, which are quite popular in areas where there is abundance of electricity cars. Where there is electricity, they will be charged, and at the time where electricity is gone, the batteries will kick in. We also do have, and I've listed them there in red, solar-powered street lamps and solar-powered traffic lights. Those are not yet certified for the South African market, unfortunately, and it's still work in progress, but it is very simple technology. And Mr. Chairperson, I would bring it to your attention that listening to the previous speaker, perhaps
you know, there could be opportunities for collaboration to address the challenges that the previous speakers have alluded to in terms of localization and so on and so forth. There is room for debate that solar-powered, you know, technologies really are not the most difficult technologies. We also, in the residential and commercial sector, offer, you know, motion monitors, sensors, so that in a parking area or in an office building, once there's no motion, the electricity or the lighting, the illumination switches off automatically, and also that goes a long way in terms of conserving energy. Now, in the transportation sector, our solutions really are in the area of the rail sector and the vehicle sector. In the rail sector, I would like to mention, without mentioning names, that we have done a lot of work with a South African company that has been developing the electric vehicle concept with the assistance of funds from the public sector. In terms of providing electric vehicle charging stations, the better technologies for that initiative, and also we were able to provide hybrid solutions where we would have a bus that would run on diesel like any other bus, and then for kickoff and also for braking, but during what in a premium called cruise time, the battery would kick in. It was a beautiful initiative that could have saved a lot of energy, but there has been complications within that initiative, but that's another debate for another discussion for another day. In the rail sector, we do manufacture locomotives proudly in Pretoria with the partnership that we've had with Transnet Space Engineering, one of our flagship projects, and the locomotives that we manufacture deliver energy efficiency of around 28%, something that we're very proud of. Again, as I indicated earlier, the traffic air control is relevant, the solar powered one is relevant in the rail sector as well, in areas where there's no grid coverage, but as I said earlier, we just need to sort of certification issues there. We do have hybrid locomotives that run on both diesel and battery in a fashion similar to the one that I explained for the buses, also delivering quite impressive energy efficiencies. And then in the industry sector, Mr. Chairman, stepping it up a little bit, we have heat recovery solutions. We have technologies that are able to harness heat from any material or any process that discharges heat. So if in a factory, you say the technologies are quite, you know, popular in the cement industry because, you know, in the process of making cement, there's a lot of heat that is being discharged, and with technologies that are able, bare machine, to harness that heat and convert it to electricity and, you know, generate up to 125 kilowatts. So you can get them together, you know, to make a megawatt. Also, interesting enough, in the diesel generators that we supply, we are very often supply them with the heat recovery solution. So you use the diesel generator to generate electricity, but the diesel generator will emit heat, and then you use the heat recovery system to harness that heat to generate more electricity without more fuel. You're using the heat that you would otherwise waste. We also have good cogeneration from flag acid solutions. This our flagship plant there is a customer in the ferrochrome industry. They run a smelter, and we, in the process of smelting the ferrochrome, they emit gases. And we noticed that the gas that they emit has a high methane content, which is compatible in our engine. So we use a gas engine, a reciprocating combustion engine. Again, we harness the gas from the exhaust, a gas that would otherwise be discharged to the environment. We use that gas to run our gas engine, and that customer is able to supplement their electricity generation by something to the tune of 8%. So 8% of the customer that usually pays about 25 million South African rand a month for electricity is quite a substantial amount. So those are, you know, just some of our industrial solutions. Wastewater treatment and reverse osmosis, these are solutions that are quite popular in the brewery industries, where in the process of making beer, we use a lot of water and barley. Now, the waste barley, otherwise known as spent grain, we also establish that it actually has a high methane content. So really all we need to do is the spent grain that, you know, the brewer would otherwise throw, you know, give away to the farmers or just find the river to throw that. If you collect that and you cover it, you you are able to harness the methane of the spent grain itself and use that methane to run one of our gas engines, also a reciprocating engine to generate electricity. We also have a landfill solution in our flagship site in Etiquette. I'm quite certain, Mr. Chairman, that everyone knows of that. It's a landfill at Etiquette Municipality in Bethesda Road, where really we generate around 6.5 megawatts of electricity using waste from the city.
Unfortunately, we went to Marianne Hill in January. We missed Bethesda Road.
Oh, okay. But it's also one of our sites as well. Both of them are our sites. They use our technologies. Oh, yes. My colleague is reminding me. The machine that you see on the middle right of that presentation is a machine, it's a Yanbach machine that is used at both of those sites. It's the Yanbach, it's a gas engine. It uses gas harness from the waste to convert to electricity. For municipalities, my colleague just tell me to speed up a little bit. Our offer is really for the municipalities in the transmission and distribution area. Seek to enhance in efficiency. We are of the view that a lot of energy is wasted through leakages and through inefficient transmission and distribution equipment, and we've got a whole list of products that are needed that seek to enhance the efficiency in the transmission and distribution network. The same for municipalities. Municipalities are responsible in our country for electricity reticulation. So we do have a lot to offer municipalities in terms of technologies against lighting protection, you know, and resulting in unnecessary leakages leading to wastage of energy. Mr. Chairman, we also view that there are equipment in terms of energy efficiency, street lamps, especially, you know, when we're able to roll out the solar powered lamps, we think those are quite, you know, easily rolled out. Government buildings, offices, parking lots. We think, you know, those do not require a lot of capital expenditure to be able to, you know, deliver the necessary energy efficiency, transmission and distribution networks, in terms of strengthening the grid capacity, in terms of enhancing stability in the grid and protecting against leakage. We think those are easily implementable solutions, and slightly more difficult in the transportation infrastructure, the rail and the buses. Rail interfaces, the hybrid solution, I know that there has been a lot of talk about it. We think it would deliver excellent energy efficiency and also, you know, efficient generation of power or electricity in the utilities themselves. So we just listed those in terms of easily implementable to most difficult to implement. But there's quite evidence, some of them, you know, require minimum financial requirements, you know, and they are able to deliver significant energy efficiencies. Now, in terms of benefits, we all know the benefits of energy efficiency. Minister Pravin Gordhan put aside 20 billion rand for the 5 years up to 2015, and a flagship real scheme that our technologies are able to appoint our customers to is the Section 5 of the Income Tax Act. Basically, you know, projects that are in the manufacturing space, projects that are located in areas where unemployment is higher than the national unemployment, in, you know, projects that are offered certain standard classification, standard industrial classification code, projects that deliver certain jobs per million, easily, you know, could save the investor something to the tune of 252 million rand if that project is a preferred project. Any points, I won't go into detail in terms of how those points are allocated. But it is, the crux of the message there is the visible financial and significant benefit to energy efficiency. And these are other benefits, second.L, you know, which I'll come out to comment in the 15th of November last year, and we're still waiting for the promulgation date. There will be South African rand kilowatt hour tax deduction for every amount that is saved. The Eskom regime, the carbon tax, that, you know, our technologies are able to shield users against. And there's also opportunities for carbon credits. I know carbon credits, there's a lot of sensitivity around it now. Now, in closing, Mr. Chairman, just closing observations, it is our observation that the few things that, you know, we could do, we'll be able to deliver a more energy efficiency, favorable regulatory system. We think currently, those are just the ratings. We do have good regulatory environment, which is why we scored that an A. It could be an A plus. We believe that we need more of the carrot and stick approaches, where you have the Section 12I and Section 12L that will reward energy efficiency. On the other side, you have the stick, which is the carbon tax. We think that regime is quite good, but we need more of those in more sectors. We also feel that we need to simplify the energy efficiency scheme. We need to be less rigid. In my previous life, I used to work for one of the four audit firms, and it took, you know, certain very few skills within the firm to be able to complete the energy efficiency application form from the DTI, from the trade, the enterprise organization, TEO, to the enterprise organization, which is a unit within the DTI. They're very complicated, you know. So it doesn't inspire much, you know, on especially the part of the smaller users, you know, to do energy efficiency, because it's just so complicated to apply and the incentives. Lastly, willingness and governance, especially at the municipality level, and for, you know, we think with a lot more of that, we'll be able to achieve a lot more energy efficiency. We were just debating with my colleague now. There is no reason why, you know, the Auditor General, when he is reviewing the financial expenditure of a municipality or an entity, when he's talking about wastage and fruitless expenditure, there's no reason why he cannot also comment on the wastage and fruitless expenditure of energy, because after all, it is money.
We'll pay the money, people.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kwebu. I know you have the marketed your product, but I can only plead with the members to see that as a model. It would have been better if Musa or MBI was presenting, but it generally like to tell the advantage, so you came to present. We couldn't stop them. Thanks very much, energy efficiency.
The last one, I remember, before we know it, there's coffee. I think it's a robot. This is the most important presentation. Welcome, Professor Kobla, all the way from Northwest.
Thank you, Chair and guests, and thank you for that introduction. The submission is basically from the South African Association for Energy Efficiency. And in short, our content we're going to look at the efficiency that has been said, so I'm going to quickly run over that, focusing on more than in terms of where we're coming from, what we're aiming towards going, and some recommendations and things we're looking at. And if you're looking at energy efficiency, it's not only about saving energy, but using it more effectively and efficiently, and reducing waste. That's really where we're looking at. Although the Southern African Association, we are not only looking at electricity. It requires these things are very imperative with imperatives that we have to look at all the energy sources available to us and making sure that wherever we use the right and appropriate energy source for the appropriate job that we need to look at. And that for us is very, very important in terms of looking at that where we're coming from. You're sitting with energy conservation, energy efficiency, energy substitution, regeneration, own generation, all of that is part of the overall mix. And necessarily you have to look at your application, which of those will you use. Sometimes, you know, energy conservation, just switching off when not needed can say significantly compared to changing of technologies, which is not more expensive to do. So those are all the areas that the SAEE aspire to and rural promotion and around energy efficiency in the country. Now, energy efficiency working the energy mix, it really presents the biggest opportunity for energy saving as well as emission saving. And other components can contribute, but we strongly feel that energy efficiency, and it has been highlighted by other speakers as well, really could make a significant contribution to that. And a very interesting study has recently been done by the International Energy Agency. And this is now, if we look at meeting and stabilizing the world at 450 particles per million of carbon dioxide, that's been done through many research studies where they found that what's going to happen after that, or that means we're going to allow the world atmosphere to temperature to increase by another 2 degrees C. Basically, beyond that, the problem currently is the models give various different results. Some of those run away in an uncontrolled fashion. Basically, we'll say we're going to go in an irreversible cycle and the world is going to run away. Some people say it's not as we want to. But bottom line is, if you look at that and looking at the contribution of the different technologies, looking at and what they can do to the world economy and to the world stabilization of the carbon emissions, we're sitting with the first one there is CCS, this carbon storage, carbon capturing and storage. That can contribute 18% to the reduction of CO2. Renewables, 17%. Now, if you compare renewables and the activity around renewables, you know, that can only contribute 17% to the world emission reduction. Nuclear, around 6%. Generation efficiency, improving existing generation, around 5%. Fuel switching from different fuels, more environmentally better fuels, let's put it rather like that, 15%. And energy efficiency, 38%. And this is really the sleeping giant that's out there. And it's not only South Africa that battles of unlocking the value of energy efficiency and taking it forward. So this is really the challenge out there internationally, not only locally. How can we open up and get the sleeping giant away? That is really the challenge the world is looking at. And there are some problems associated with it. Why is not happening? And I'll come back a little bit later today. Just in short, what is the SAE all about? We're looking at association, a voluntary association, looking at creating networking, accreditation, and the creation of knowledge around energy efficiency and energy management. We are now in existence for 10 years. We were established in 2002. We are also a chapter of the United US-based Association of Energy Engineers. which is recognized in 89 countries. South Africa, more than 1,800 professionals have been gone through some training related to our service providers, and we present annual conventions, conferences, platforms, really to create an environment where people can work together to actually better understand what energy efficiency is all about. So we our stakeholders in the process are individuals, students, professionals, educational institutions, end users, energy service providers, equipment suppliers, research and development. The aim really is to make energy efficiency one of those cost-effective opportunities that companies can invest in taking their business forward, but also saving the environment. Our board of directors currently are all volunteers, currently I'm the president of it. Dr. Sakani Chombemi of the Technology Innovation Agency, Lisa Reynolds, Carl Stein, Hope Mashele, and Sidney Schilderberg of Sassel, and two other existing board of directors being elected. So Africa, just a little bit of interesting thing, you know, we all, to show you that we are not that far behind. I mean, certain things, we are really leading the world in terms of what is happening. Specifically on the scene of measurement and verification, you know, through the South African Bureau of Standards, the SANS 2010 Measurement and Verification of Energy Saving Standard is the first standard on measurement and verification that was published in the world. And it's aligned also with the ISO 50001 Energy Management System, and currently South Africa through the SABS and its committees are leading the ISO committee to develop an M&D standard for ISO that will be incorporated in the ISO 50001. So that's activities that's driven with South Africa and invited to chair those committees in going forward. So I think in terms of that, quite ahead, you know, in terms of that. Although the SAE has won the AE Best International Chapter of the Year award for the last consecutive years, and we really see that government's submission on energy efficiency is a breakthrough in our country in terms of efforts going forward. What we think is very important, looking at energy, that we need to look at an integrated approach between all the stakeholders as listed there. It's very, very much involved because energy efficiency is not only one person that can do it. You need a regulatory environment. You need the end users involved to understand what it's all about. You need the service providers. You need to supply those services to those industries. I think that combination is really what, on the one side, that makes it more difficult for us to open up the opportunities around energy efficiency. Historic energy efficiency and challenges. I think one of the, you know, we started some years ago, ESCOM IDM program is very, very successful, driven from a utility point of view. We would love to see more initiatives driven from industry, driven from the end users as well, and not only the utility driving those. But if you look at what's happened in South Africa and you compare that to internationally, it has always been the utilities that started and kick-started the process, and then the others have followed. So I think we are on the right track where we started with our process. The important thing is how we're going to take it forward in terms of opening up this massive opportunity also to all the other stakeholders. What's important, and that is the incentives that we developed, SAFI, tax incentives. There's a few large projects that's coming up that in the process. From the indication is, although behind the scenes a lot is happening, but from industry point of view, everybody is waiting. And that is unfortunately something where the incentives and those other things that can really open up energy efficiency for us and more breaking down as barriers, again, the financial barriers that we're looking at. One of the biggest problems is that I think is in the process that we are trying to resolve is really the concept of energy efficiency is not always easily understood. It's easy to give a definition of what it's all about, but really the quantification of energy efficiency is like measuring a void. You're measuring something that does not exist anymore. And that is a little bit problematic in a process, and that is in terms of the process, one of the, I will say, worldwide always be one of the stumbling blocks. And the challenge is really to make that repeatable, transparent, simple, but still with a give, not jeopardizing the credibility of the project. And that will be the challenge always on the measurement and verification side. Because in the end, somebody pays the financial, we cannot, the credibility and all those savings are also very, very important. Also, we're sitting, unfortunately, with exploitation of misinformed end users in the industry, and that plays a credibility and risk of the whole industry at stake. And that is one of our biggest problems also, where people have really been exploited in the process. Proposed focus areas that we think is important on the areas of research. We think it's important that looking going forward, companies that use more than a specific amount of energy through regulation should be forced to have energy managers on board, where they have the people that's dedicated to looking at energy. Our indication is looking at 1,000 gigajoules for energy consumers per year or more. We think really for every one of those, an energy manager is needed. Also, regulations on organizations that consume high levels of energy to have an energy policy in place that is managed, not only just on paper. To make sure that they have in-house suppliers, skill and knowledge on energy efficiency, implement information systems for mandatory energy monitoring and reporting. And that's a very important strategic thing. If you look at what's happening internationally, countries have always started with mandatory reporting of usage. Once that is in place, the next step then is to say, okay, now we need you to start mandatory reporting of sale. And that is a progressive process that most countries have followed, and we think we could learn from them and take the same approach in that regard. We think it's very important that market and communication of energy efficient measures and the value therefore need to be communicated much further. Investment towards energy efficiency, those things, the monetary side, always an issue in terms of it. This allowing inefficient technology by enforcing regulations, legislation, we think that is very, very important. Specifically, looking at health inefficient technologies, those should be disincentivized as much as possible, because it's costing us for many, many years once they've been implemented. Subsidizing through taxation of the import of energy efficient technologies, we think that's something that could be, and of course, energy, as mentioned before, tariff regulation. We think the very important, is the knowledge and skill levels need to be. Knowledge is the basis of changing behavior, making better choices, and saving therefore energy emissions and sustainable jobs. We think those need to start from the basic level, even from school level. We need to make people aware on the benefits of energy efficiency, using less energy, teaching people the basics of energy, the value of use thereof at school children. I think that's important. We need to start there. Countries like Germany have been doing it for 50 years, and they are now really reaping the benefits of that. And I think it's important that we start early with our new schools and teachers in energy efficiency projects by implementing in school buildings, government, go through the mathematics of energy, teaching people to relate to. I think that's very important. At tertiary level, also it's important, I think, there, looking at the natural curriculum to create a new career path in energy engineering, energy management, and so on. Currently, the universities all are focusing on research around it, but there are no clear energy engineering. You're either mechanical or electrical or chemical focused, specializing in energy. And I think it's important to have a look at that. And then also taking that not only into the engineering, but also into the accounting and financial environment. I think it's very important that we bring it into taking energy efficiency into the boardroom. We need to take it out of the boardroom, into the boardroom. That is really where the financial decisions are being made. First of it. Universities are active in those, or most of the universities now have active research around that. Post education level and upskilling, we think that's very important. Looking at the whole skill sector on how we can look at uplift skills, supported energy to look at it similar than your safety approaching energy similar than a safety program. We think really in essence that is really the area to go for driving energy efficiency through the companies and in the whole process. Education, as I mentioned, we think that is really essence that will turn it around so that people became aware what can be done, further development of the artisan technical level. And it's not only PhDs that we need. We need people educated in energy efficiency from all levels of their society, and it's very much important. Currently, most of the drives in terms of research education come from the university point of view. I think we're failing our country in that regard, because there are only so many people at university. We need to get these to the ground, people on the ground, also understand just the basics of what energy is all about. Changing human behavior. Germany has been doing it for many, many years, and they are now reaping the benefits. For the last number of years, the total energy use in Germany came down. Their overall efficiency over the last 20 years, in other studies have shown they improved their overall efficiency by more than 50%. That is where Germany is standing at this point in time. So they are growing their economy, but their absolute total amount of energy that they're using per year is coming down. We are still believing that to grow we need more energy. Germany has turned it around. And that is the thing that we will need to look at strategically. How can we do more by actually using less? And it's a complete paradigm shift that we need to go through. We are not nearly there yet, thinking it that point of view. So therefore, education, awareness, all those things are crucial things that need to be done in the future in going forward with where we go. Looking at the research things is very important. Technology, all the things that highlighted over there for us. Our strategy, I think, is what's important is we need to have a clear strategy with clear targets and objectives. Because with a clear target and objective, we can start managing it. Without that, it will be a very difficult one for us to go forward. Funding, I think the important thing there is a few areas that we can look at, but the most important thing is I think the government should really look for incentivizing in terms of projects, because that is really the thing. Those incentives will open up opportunities. And I think, just in conclusion, we strongly believe energy efficiency should be positioned as a catalyst for economic growth. And if you look even internationally, if you're looking across the globe, energy efficiency is seen as one of those key areas for creating jobs, creating opportunities for people. I think we should definitely also follow. But it's also there to take it to that route. It's very important to educate everybody to make sure that it's there. We need to, if you look at international mix of energy efficiency, 38% of that is what the world is needing for energy efficiency to stabilize the world equation on that side. We think it's important to create clear paths associated with energy efficiency, and that through sustainable will create us sustainable jobs and forward for our region.
Thank you very much, Professor Sokla. Once again, all the members of the court station in the afternoon. As you can see, Professor Sokla is getting more popular. Can I invite questions, comments from the members? Let's just go down the line from Baba Luka. Thank you, Chair. I think one of the things that is noticeable here in the work, when we talk about energy saving, and we sit in this room and look around, I think it's a worst example of what we try to achieve. I think rather than the starting point would be government building. Professor Kobla, you see what you've done now. Yes, I do believe that the Germans have been very strict in terms of their behavior, they're very disciplined in what they do. But they did start somewhere, and they graduated to where they are now. And I think it is time that we also start and actually be active in what we do. Just start by, the General Electric, I think they came up with serious things. And they talk about buses and locomotives, 28% energy. These are good things. I just wish the committee could witness up on these things, if it's possible for us to
to see, because that's important. I don't know, when we were in China, at the show, all the buses were going on battery. All of them. And this all around, as you got there, you jumped to the battery vehicle. So that is possible. And the Cape Flats is one of the, Cape Town is one of the places that was relatively flat. And I think it could be a good place to start. I'm so happy to hear. I want to ask the question I asked yesterday about daylight saving. I think we might get another view. But when there's something that can be done, because when we look at the Libyan, we run almost the same as we had at the prison. And it's not a very special. Our planes operate between the two countries. We call them, we go relatively, we speak to them, and it operates. But I would like to get a view of their subject here. It's, I do agree that the transport sector is one of the biggest places where we should start. The other thing is that local context. And the union, I think that it's absolutely essential. I think at least one way. Because if we say we want to produce a chair here in South Africa, and we say, okay, here's a quotation, give us a quotation in South Africa. And we take that quotation to China, give us a quotation. And you get a vast difference. And that is where the problem is. That is unaffordable. And therefore, we shoot ourselves in the foot. I just want to comment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Be very short. One for NASA. Should we go the time use management system? How would you see us roll that out, or maybe the possible red tape that we could face, especially in local government level? How is it possible, or will it be too costly in your view, in order for us to achieve some of the goals that we would like to? And just on a comment, I think for a young company, I must say to SAE, congratulations. It's nice to be seen as leading certain fields and getting the awards that they it is nice. But I think with that, it's a lot of resurgence that goes along with it, and our institutional academics that play a big role within those certain things. And I think it is, but it comes with a price, because if you want to lead, it's very expensive. So I do want to say congratulations. I don't want to take much.
Thank you, Chair. I see that it's awesome here because people don't ask too many questions.
Yeah,
very energy. Yeah, just on each of them, let me go to some of my questions. I just following on from my colleague's comments around the time of use meters, which has certainly come up as an issue now, and which ESCOM itself has said now needs to be rolled out. And I, from my own kind of research, has definitely indicated in municipalities this would make a huge difference in terms of shifting the peak load of 3,000 megawatts, which is really what we need to do in the short term. The issue is, though, is how is this going to be funded? Do you think that we should fund this through ESCOM's MYPD, or do you think that it should come from the national fiscus, run as a kind of national project where the funds are given by government to municipalities, or should it be partly funded by municipalities as well? Just to hear your kind of thoughts on that, because I really think this is a project which can be implemented very fast and which could achieve the kind of desired results very quickly. And I think we need to start to talk about how it gets implemented. Then just in terms of the kind of institutional arrangements around energy efficiency. I mean, my feeling at the moment is that ESCOM's doing a fairly good job of demand-side management initiatives, and that they are using the funds through the tariffs to be able to implement those. And I think one of the reasons why they are doing such a good job is because they are in a crisis, and there clearly is a push from ESCOM side to reduce the demand. So clearly they have a huge incentive to do this now. The issue is, though, I mean, do you think that the constitutional arrangements around energy efficiency for the long term is the right institutional arrangement? Because my feeling is that it's fine for ESCOM to do the system once they have management now in the short term, but ultimately we need to migrate to a system where energy efficiency is given national priority, is run by some kind of a national agency that is properly funded, does the proper research, and it looks at what kind of interventions can be implemented. And the head of NERSA has also been saying that you've got the data. You say that data is available, it just needs to all be created. The issue is, and it brings me back to my first point earlier in the morning, is that when it comes time to do the ILP or to revise the ILP, do we have enough data now to be able to say, like they do in other ILPs around the world, to say, this particular energy efficiency initiative will cost us so much, it will then yield so much megawatts, and therefore this should be modeled as an actual ILP initiative in comparison to building a power station? Because that's ultimately where we've got to get to. We can't just be thumb-sucking 3,200 megawatts energy savings for the next 20 years. What I want to see as migrate to is a very intensely modeled situation where we can compare energy efficiency initiatives and megawatt savings compared to building a new power station. I mean, that's ultimately where we're going to migrate to. Do we have enough data to be able to do that at this point in time, or do we need to drill down far more at the end of the year? Then also just on a solar water heater system. Also brought this issue up. I mean, I think part of the problem with a solar water heater system, and I see it being replicated, when we talk about the million solar water heater systems, when ESCOM breaks that down, they say that they're looking at installing 800,000 low-pressure systems and 200,000 high-pressure systems to reach that target of a million. Now, the problem with that, though, is that the low-pressure systems, to me, are largely about getting hot water to people. It's not about taking the demand off the grid. So the issue is, should we then be funding that through the tariff in terms of low-pressure systems, or should that be funded through the fiscus in terms of a social responsibility mechanism? Because the issue is it's really the high-pressure systems that are removing that demand from the grid, and really that should be funded by the tariff because it has a direct correlation to that. I'm just being interested to hear your feelings around that particular issue. Or at the very least, there should be parity of a half a million high-pressure systems and half a million low-pressure systems. So I'm just being interested to hear what you have to say about that. And then the person from Lumsa, I mean, yeah, it's interesting hearing you talk because, I mean, what it did illuminate to me and what I have been aware of, and I wasn't aware of how energy efficiency was working at a kind of firm level, at a company level. And what is very clear to me, and I've seen it in my own kind of experience, is that energy efficiency is not just about a company saying, right, we're going to buy a technology, put it in, and we're going to get energy efficiency kind of benefit. It has to be a whole kind of behavioral change within the ambit of that firm. And I think we're going to bring about that behavioral change, and what you're talking about is precisely what's needed, is that we need to get those partnerships with the very people that actually are going to be entrusted with driving forward energy efficiency, which is your shop stewards, which is your workers, which is your managers. And so it is a bit depressing to hear that that hasn't filtered down to the workplace. And I think that that is something we're going to have to take cognizance of and think through those ways. How do we get this kind of embedded into the DNA of our company so that everyone becomes an energy efficiency champion? And it's great to see that you are committed to that. So, you know, at least we've got you on board with that, for that particular thing. I mean, I think I'll just leave it there for now. So lastly, the last presentation, you talked about that you want South Africa's energy mix of 38% of generation to come from energy efficiency. Now, if I work that out in terms of the ILP, we're talking about 40,000 megawatts of new generation. So ultimately, what you're saying is around about 15,000 megawatts of our 20-year energy plan should come from energy efficiency. Is that, in your estimation, a doable target? I mean, is that something which you think is embedded in our economy at the moment, which we could realize, is 50,000 megawatts? Because at the moment, we're only talking about 3,200 megawatts in terms of the 20-year energy plan. I would argue that it's far too low, and I think what we heard today is too low. The issue is, what should that figure be? Are you saying it should be around about 15,000 megawatts? And if so, that changes the dynamics around our future world program to a remarkable extent. So I'll be interested to hear what you have to say on that.
Sean, you want to say something, please?
Can you get the presenter to respond? No, I was just picking something, but otherwise we still have an order of members there.
Honourable Chair, I need to have some comments. Honourable Trading has put a lot together for all of us to think about and for the responses from the presenters. But certainly, we have to look at a mindset change. We have to look at a huge educational drive, and that Professor spoke about education all around. We're not talking about academic education. We're talking about educating our people in how we should be conserving and changing our energy behavior. Certainly, the transport sector has come up more than once, and the transport sector has to look at how they change themselves. And I have here that the municipalities need to come on board fully. So this is simply a bit of a disjunction between municipalities and the national. And then I also have the same question about who funds and how. And then the unions, no problems with the unions, the civil service, the civil society getting involved. But it must be holistic, and it must be a full approach, not just a one-sided approach. Thank you very much, Chair.
Anything down the line?
Okay, thank you, sir. NERSA, your slide 9. You said this failure is in the process of revised mechanical revision of the new standard for policies on the Department of Change. The day it where the same piece was published in 2009, and now it is 7, so I'm trying to check on that one. I take you to slide 18. You are saying the ways of improvement. Clearer government policies and institutional responsibilities will improve the governance of EE. I think that is of importance to us to what actually does that mean, so that if we have to follow this up and pick it up and do something about it. I think on those have been covered. On ZE, on General Electric, can I take you to your very last page, your last quotation? You are saying the energy efficiency is a financial imperative for everyone. I really put my constituency cap there, my policy cap, and my household cap. What do you mean to me as an individual other than those big structures that you are really dealing with? Thank you.
Thank you very much, from my side, General Electric, it's in one of the slides, not in what you have here. I still have the last slide where you are doing the rating.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I would like to emphasize that Professor Maitula at that point, so your quick win doesn't seem to be including the low rank of the income segment. And we're always keen to hear that in the parliament, part of the state, what are we saying for on that? With regard to NERSA, it's quite interesting when you say data is available. As we move along, particularly down the line, we may have to get some more on that side, probably not only from you, but from others. And the other questions I can throw to even the Energy Efficiency Association. What role would Tesla play in this? Because I know some states, they do submit some statistics. But one thing that the department raised something is that every day in time, data collection, data management, generally in South Africa, is a challenge. Well, there's nothing outside of this, but access to it, how it is packaged, and it's linked to what Professor Kroper said, which I'd like to comment. The use of mandatory monitoring, and particularly mandatory reporting, because then mandatory reporting would then put like easy for data management. If I use the general term, energy data management, which would give us a fair picture. Maybe other perspective of the question is that NERSA, are you actually equipped to ensure that information is available or you can enforce it? And I'm not asking you just as an electricity regulator, but in general. Your slide 15 around the current RT 2010, you see, the target is 2,420 megawatts demand savings the next 20 years, or 131 megawatts demand savings per annum. Why is this so low? What is on this? I take it, I'm just naively asking it, and I thought there would be higher figures because around demand savings model, energy efficiency shock from a problem. From your side, you can also comment on this. The following slide, NASA, you make reference to process optimization in the industry. Could be helpful if you could give us a few examples of that. For some people, there is a nice piece of it. Just for record, I see in the following slide you say 187,380 units of solar heaters have been rolled out. Maybe you should qualify that as a state for a lot of people there. The following slide, ways of improving energy efficiency. Make reference to a couple of things. One, you make reference to the need for clearer government policies. Furthermore, for legislative clarification, can you take us through what are you referring to on that? Once again, your coordination, your reference to coordination and coordination between government departments, policies, and institutional mechanisms. I was going to ask right there, would you be including various tiers of government and what about civil society organizations or things? Because you've just shared with us that part of your engagement is actually to go out into the public and engage with it as well. I thought that was part of this. Diversifying the incentives, can you elaborate on that slide 18? In what way would incentives be diversified? Another important area in slide 20, you say the MNP function should be independent of the fund administrator. Who is the fund administrator? So that's quite an important thing because it might be an issue that we need to consider and follow up in future. With NUSA, because I was out there, someone who was to declare his, what do we say, make a public declaration of my trade on the ground. It's good, once again, to show that unions are not equal with rights. That used to be my, preaching clarion during my days in trade union. Unions are not equal with rights. It's similar that, as you can see, how NUMSA is articulated that, and I trusted, I wish everyone was here, particularly from the business sector, to order to see how they then can respond to advances, not only NUMSA, but others. So, I would have loved to be your counterpart, NUM, who operates in the energy field as well, who have been here to reinforce what you're saying. Because part of your daily engagement with the companies, is to ensure that the positive things come. Job creation in particular. But my question is that I don't see you making reference to EPAP and localization accord opportunities. Could you comment on that? Because one definitely knows that from time to time you've made a lot of contribution in that respect. And being part of SOSAR too, to what extent has that issue been handled at NASA? I'm aware that one of the areas I quoted the department on, Department of Energy, was that this energy and efficiency issue must be handled, or ought to be handled, or supposed to be, or will be handled at NASA level. But from our experience, have you seen the opportunity whenever it presented itself at NASA level, whether on your own or to proceed to ensure that energy issues are given the priority or the consideration they deserve, particularly with the emphasis and aspiration from Prof. Krobler. Professor Krobler, you say in the point 6, I suppose, not slide 6, but good slide 6, that government is requesting submissions on energy efficiency as a breakthrough for our country and still culminating tremendous efforts invested in the industry thus far by the stakeholders. But it seems we have some reservations. I hope I read God bless you. I think, but is there anything that you see that can be improved today? And also to emphasize the need for an integrated approach in energy efficiency and list a number of institutions, organizations, and which of them are part of your institution, that's what I can address. Although you are given history of the energy efficiency and its challenges in point 8, whereby you think first I that tendencies are very few, they are very few large projects, and the L tech tendencies not much is happening. My question is, who come? That's not slide the answer again. You said the ESCOM IDM funding is driven from a utility point of view. That's a bit concerning. Again, not much. Because I assume that ESCOM does seem in line with the national strategy. So the question is a utility point of view out of line with the national strategy? For example, National Group Park, National Development Plan, and even up to EPAP. For that matter. The issue of energy managers, I speak up myself just out of my own curiosity that there are a number of companies that are engaging in that area. How far has that penetrated in Africa in terms of awareness and in terms of and implementation as well? Just as a comment on 10.1, wonderful, at basic level, the state also donates must penetrate schools and teachers, so forth, but to leave out workers. Just as a comment. Remember, there are hundreds of thousands. Once again, who are the ones who switch off the machine, who switch off the light, the computer? While energy managers or high-level managers do not see them. And I dare say to you, among other areas, that's where it comes. Because every amount that's saved by that one individual will have a cumulative effect, you know, in the overall energy efficiency. Particularly when they said it's 8%, you know, or they say 8% is the accumulation of a drop of the rain, which will make a rivulet and a river and okay, shall I end there and allow responses? Professor Shi, I see you are itching, but I will allow those who are late to the nation to respond then. Okay,
Professor Hawk. When you spoke to paragraph 10.2 and paragraph 10.4, in 10.2, you said the development needs our program to create a new career path, high energy. In 10.4, you said provide funding mechanism through battery. I read the sort of substance institute of chartered accountants, PICA, who in their field saw the need, not only saw the need, they developed a regular curriculum and they sponsored. Is that thinking that way from PICA?
Yes, thank you. I would like to make to answer Mr. Chair and the Honourable Prof's comments. The comment was, what does GE do at the grassroots level using the political weight? And the comment from the Chair was the slide that my colleague not include, which gave a rating of some sort. If you recall, the rating that was given to the willingness and government engagement, it talks about our interrelations with the municipalities, where those are the people that change behavior, and by changing behavior, that means the municipalities will be the ones that would probably get some of our equipment, which are addressing the issue of getting closer to the people. And one of the slides mentioned that we are a technology provider and we are not a behavioral changer. So within our scope, we can do what we can, which is the technology. But in terms of educating the community, we would expect the municipality, because it's in their control, to even procure those equipment. Now, just to come to the other comments from the Honourable Gentleman, we have been, we have our Southern Africa, and some utilities in Southern Africa, I'll code it, ZESCO, which is in Zambia. The government has asked us to look at their government buildings, where we retrofit all their, to serve the government. That way you can drive behavioral change. Where we retrofit all the government buildings and all the government offices within the city of Lusaka and the utility itself, the square offices, we retrofit it by putting energy efficient technologies. That answers how can we change behavior. It's the willingness of the authority that will drive change, and that change will be felt by the person or the man on the street. That's how we do it in GD.
I don't have to answer, but before I forget it, a champion, honorable member. A champion. Who is the lady who just passed on in Kenya, who was a champion in environment? Professor Mangai Matai. When we have a champion, things happen. And she left this world with about 40 million trees planted. I hope I'm quite accurate. A champion, Professor Faulkner. That's what you need to prove in your poetry.
Let's come this
way. Yeah, answer.
The person, the team will answer. We will indicate which question we're responding to and get through.
I will answer the question about the program daylight saving, what can be done. In terms of daylight savings, I would like to recommend the universities and the South African Energy Efficiency Association as well as ESCOM to conduct sufficient studies in order to determine whether this program is cost-effective for South Africa, to determine the demand and energy savings and also the cost associated with this program, and to publish these studies to make awareness about this issue, because a lot of countries in the world have established their life saving programs and they registered a lot of things associated with this program, but unfortunately it hasn't been done in South Africa. I do remember that the Durban University of Technology did some studies of that, that was some years back. So somehow analysis and studies must be initiated in order to close that matter and to make a decision whether we should go ahead or not. And the next two questions that I would answer are related to the integrated resource plan. The first question is, RC, do we have enough data to model demand side management and energy efficiency data as generation technologies and compare them on equal footing with other generation resources? Yes, we do have data. And we've done that before in IRP 1, 2, and 3. They have been compared and the efficiency of each and every energy efficiency and demand side management program has been compared. And the third question, which is also related to integrated resource planning, what informs the energy efficiency savings and the DSM in the plan? It's all the same. The DSM and the energy efficiency plan that is embedded in the integrated resource plan 2010 is informed by EPCOM energy efficiency and DSM plan, as well as the Department of Energy policy for global warming.
Honorable Chair, I know you asked why it was so low, and it requires the incorporation of it in the plan, the demand savings. It was a conservative number because if you make it high and it's not achieved and you have said that other power stations must not be built, then you are going to be caught up in a tight situation. So that's why the number was more conservative. And if you happen to save more than what was in the plan, then it's safer, then the power station building can be postponed. But when you have not wired it that way, then you would be caught up in a tight situation. But it can be, because we have had, EPCOM has exceeded some of those. But it is also something that you must watch because it is not permanent. Once you change valves, and you need to maintain that. And if it is not always there, then you don't have that energy saving that you thought you would have. But it can be made high, but it's a question of planning, and this was a conservative plan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question that I'm going to respond to is the one that was raised with regard to the units that were installed, the solar water heater units that were installed. The question was saying which period was it for? It was actually for the financial year of 2011-12, according to ESCOM's annual report. The other point that I need to add on is that there's another question that was raised with regard to the performance of the low pressure and the high pressure solar water heaters. We realized also that the low pressure solar water heaters are not performing that well in terms of the energy savings. So it's being planned that the low pressure would be funded through the fiscal funding instead of the tariff rate. So for the next NYPD that we're expecting, we're not expected to be having to budget for the low pressure just because it's not part of the, it's not performing in terms of the energy efficiency saving. So that would be funded through the national treasury.
I'll respond to the question on slide 16. You said, what do you mean by process, industrial process optimization? In this case, we are referring to a setup like industrial plants. For example, if you consider a company like ArcelorMittal, they do metal refinery. In the process that happens, they produce flue gases, waste flue gases that are just let into the air. So by process optimization is that you recover those waste gases and then use them maybe to drive a steam turbine generator and get electricity. Another scenario could be example in industries like manufacturing of fertilizer, where you use nitric acid manufacturers and thermochemical creation, it produces a lot of heat. So out of that chemical process, you then recover the heat and use it again to drive steam turbine generators. So basically, that's what I mean by industrial process optimization.
Honourable members, the part I'm going to try and then address the rest of the questions that were asked. I just want to add on the one about the solar water heaters, the specifically your low pressure systems. The reason why it was funded via ESCOM's tariff in the past is because ESCOM still has a compact with the government to electrify so many households and to put in so many solar water heaters as part of their corporate social investment. It is actually one of the reasons why the application that ESCOM was giving to us has been delayed, because now there's a talk to say that remove the things that should be done by the filters, do the things that we can do. But in the past, that has been in ESCOM's compact. That's the compact ESCOM had with the government, and that's what they will continue with. So now ESCOM is saying, if you don't want us to do it, then remove it from our compact. National Treasury in this year's budget has already put in the sufficient funds that would then carry on with that. And I think generally those are things that should be funded from the fiscal, not from that. However, one of the things that we must also accept is that in the past, the fiscal or National Treasury has not been budgeting for certain things, and those are things that needed to be done, and the easiest was to get them done via tariffs. And one of them that we have had to do, we've had to put a tariff or the amount in the tariff, was the part about energy efficiency and the non-ESCOM generation. Otherwise, if it wasn't, then this repeat would not have been possible. So in the past, there's been things that are easier to do by taking them from the tariff instead of saying they must be taken from the taxpayers. And it also goes to that part where we mentioned that to say that we need clearer government policies so that when there's an initiative that the country says it needs to be done, then it must also be clear who's going to collect the funds for that to be done. So saying it must be done and allocating no funds anyway is exactly what does not get done. And in the past, that's what we've had to do.
Okay, can you send that so that when we're together, Special Committee and NASA, we take up that up a little bit more in depth?
Right, we'll do that, Chairperson. The other question that you had was that I know that Bianca answered the part about enough data, and the reason why there is enough data, and I think some of the people, when they come here and say that there's no information, there will be no information if you don't ask for information. But if you just look at the South African situation, in the past, NASA was developing what was called the National Integrated Resource Plan, NIRP 1, 2, and 3. IRP 2010 is also based on that. All of the information that was there done by NASA was then passed on to the Department of Energy. So the information is there, but if the EIUG does not ask NASA for the information, then the EIUG will not have the information. Secondly, the 184 municipalities that are licensed municipalities have to provide NASA with information so that we can set the tariff. So the information about what is required for all of these things, also about the other licenses, not just ESCOM, is what we have. The accuracy thereof, we may not say that it's 110% accurate, but it is also not lower than 90% accurate. So it is somewhere in the 90s range, the accuracy of the information that we have. So it is there, and sometimes if you want to know how many households are on a certain tariff, here's the question of adding all of these. If you want to know which ones are using this, it's a question of really manipulating the data that is already available. It's not that it's not there.
Honourable Member, ISMO is, among other things, supposed to handle data, isn't it? If not, let's be sharp on that. Because there must be a central repository. Leave it on the independent side as well, because if you can hear what is being said and Professor King also comment, there seems to be some politics and dynamics in it. And you and I sitting here, all we're interested in is that
people must just collect data and share it, because it helps to plan, it helps to manage. And that's the fundamental, not just from the national side, but we are a regulator in order to respond to applications and things, but generally. Now, whether it's planning by government, whether it's planning by the private sector, whether it's just engaging with the state, you know, from civil society side, just access to information.
The current legislation does put a responsibility on SANEDI to collect this information. It also says that HESA must also have this information. So there are authorities that are required to have this information, as such the information is there. The question around the institutional arrangements for energy efficiency, yes, it is true, ESCOM is not the best place to do this. ESCOM's function is to sell electricity, not to promote that people must not buy it. So that is there to do. So in the long run, you cannot have the utility that's tasked with selling the product be the one that says people must not buy the product. And as you have said, Honorable Trading, that it is because they are in a tight situation that now they're driving it. But going forward, the National Energy Efficiency Agency that was created 10 years ago was exactly the entity that was going to drive it, now, which is now part of SANEDI and SANEDI. And that's how you drive it, with an agency that separates, that has a different budget and different targets, and it will drive it without having to compromise other things within the business. Now, the one of the time of use, first let me start with the part about funding it. The Electricity Regulation Act for now still allows municipalities and other licenses to fund their equipment via the tariffs or via loans. You will find that the city of Joburg can still get some loans, or they sometimes use them. But in a lot of cases, they also use the tariffs. They will say in the 11% that they've been given, they want 0.5%. Which must be ring-fenced for finding that. But under normal circumstances, putting in meters that can do or measure the time of use, or that can be smarter, or that are prepaid, helps to be a function of that utility. And in the current process, municipalities use their tariffs to put on the new smart meters or the prepaid meters that are there. And as far as whether there's a problem in putting in the time of use, there are municipalities. The city of Joburg is using the time of use, but they use it for certain customers that consume above 1,000 kilowatt hours, and those customers that they believe are capable of shifting the load. If you look at the customers that are in your what was the called township before, there's no load that they shift. They are only going to come in and cook at this time, and they're not going to cook at midnight. But if you look at your affluent, who have swimming pools, washing machines, yes, they can shift the load, so you give them the time of use month. What is misaligned, though, in our system is that when they buy from ESCOM, they buy at the time of use. But as with pricing, what they do is they know that we are buying at the time of use, we are going to price our services in a way that ensures that we recover all of the money that we're supposed to recover. So that's where the challenge is, that you can have the time of use, but if the incentives and what you want to drive is as misaligned as we have it with municipalities, they are just going to price the time of use at a level that is not worth even going to the time of use. A typical example that we have is with the energy efficiency and Sol Plati, a municipality refuses to install solar water heaters, the retrofit, because when they do that, it reduces their revenue by 40%. They say, we are not going to do that. Can come with all of that. It is not going to be done in this municipality. And there are many others that are doing that, have just chosen for clarity. So there's still the need to have energy efficiency and reduce the demand, but then there's this other fiscal pool where they say, where are we going to get the money from when we reduce that? So electricity happens to be their cash out. But it can be done. The other question was on SSA, what role do they play? SSA shares information with NASA, and they can play a role, and they do provide additional information, and they do get information also from NASA to, can we confirm, was this the amount that was used, and check with ESCOM. So SSA is a player that has other information that's on there. For instance, the use of inflation figures on population growth,
are figures that we take on, that is, that as a solid we input into our other planning processes. So the two work in a complementary manner. The mandatory reporting, I must say that I'm going to answer maybe by saying that in most of the licenses, most of the people who have to provide information, it is mandatory. Sometimes the reason we don't get the information is because some of the municipalities don't have the ability to provide that information, but they are required to provide information. You will find in others that there's no CFO and no person responsible for this, so we end up setting our own analysts who then sit there and work with the people to get the information. But there's 184 of them, we only have about 30 analysts. But we are working on having a system that's going to ensure that when we require information that is for setting of prices and other things, we are not only going to rely on the municipality that will let us down in the last minute and not provide us with the information. We are also going to have our own people working with them to ensure that we get the necessary data.
I thought you would whisper some soft
We have a project that's called the Regulatory Reporting Manual and Regulatory Reporting System, which is a software that's going to link the municipality to the NESA office, but it still needs to be driven by a person on the other side, and it still needs to get accurate information input on the other side. Otherwise, we are going to get information that's not reliable on the other side. So we will have people, but the software is going to link the two. But we need the data inputs to be people or to input the correct data. Because what we find in most of these, we get municipalities that would say, how many customers do you have? They put a number. They put 50. And they say, how many times? They put any other number just to fill in that. So you need to filter your data before it gets to the part where you are going to process it. And it's easier when we have people who are assisting there in the filtering of the data so that by the time it gets to us, it's data that's usable. And yes, I think we're adequately equipped in areas where we think we require more. We get the temp because the part about inputting data is really getting through the address book and where the customer meter and part of it is not really that sophisticated. So for now, the system that we're putting in are going to augment our other deficiencies in dealing with the data. But it's, in our view, it was a three-year program, and it is already yielding the results. I think many of the people who came to the public hearings of EDI, the industry, indicated that 80% of the municipalities for the year 2011-12 were using NESA tariffs, and I think right now we are sitting at above 90%. Of the municipalities, so we're getting closer to the 100%. Then the policies, I think, has been spoken about, and the coordination that we're referring to between government and civil society, I think for us at NESA, in the rules and regulations that we develop, is very inherent in the very way process that we undertake before we promulgate rules. And when we started in 2002, it was all a consultative process where everybody else was involved. In fact, in 2009, when we first consulted on the energy efficiency demand-side management regulatory rules, it was also an included process where everybody else participated. What stopped it at that stage was this institutional arrangement or the allocation of funds that I've spoken about, because at that stage, when the Department of Energy wanted to use the funds that ESCOM had, the 5.2 billion rand that ESCOM had in the multi-year price determination, ESCOM refused that. This we put in because we're going to do this project. And if you want to take it and do other projects, then it's going to be debatable whether you're entitled to that. You must get your own money, otherwise you can't get our one. And that's what stalled that. And it is now in this determination that the one for 2013 up to 2016, the MYCD that we are waiting for, that all of the projects for demand side, including those of ESCOM and those that the government wants to undertake, will be ring-fenced that in the same way as has been done for the renewable energy. Then maybe the process then will be that way stopped in 2009. And I think the one about identifying the incentives, Bianca, we're really talking about in the current system, you only have a certain amount that you get for using your demand, but
we're talking about incentives that like you either have the standard offer, you either have there are many other schemes that are there. You even have the financing of it done differently. And that's what has made energy efficiency to be taken up in other countries. But those, we can provide the details, and those are part of the details that were brought when we had the consultations around energy efficiency. And I think fund administrator referring to currently, the funds are in EFCOM's account, so they are the ones who are administering the fund. And the recommendation is that even if they get connected through the tariff for that matter, if it is assumed, it is agreed that they must not be connected, or they must not come from the fiscal, they must come from the tariff, then ECOM should not be the one then who say that, okay, you've made your savings, I pay you. The administrator of the fund should be different from the current administrator that we have. The proposal that was there was that it would be done by the DBSA, but it didn't go through. And I trust that I've responded to all of the questions that you have.
Thank you. Namaste.
Thank you, Chair. A few points. Most of what was said were comments. But let me just say that we want to assure honorable members that our approach to this question, although it wasn't qualified and defined, is not one side. I think we understand the consequences of not having an aggressive energy efficient program. Because, I mean, take for instance the sector that we organize as NUMSA. I mean, the cost structure of the founder sector, just in terms of how much they spend in sort of electricity, we have, together with employers, sat down and sketched that over time. And it is in our interest to try and save some energy. Because if that doesn't happen, quite soon we'll be sitting across the table faced with the notices of retrenchment. So it is in our interest, and I think we do take a broader approach, either informed by what happens with the challenges of supply, the climate change, and all of that. And I would want to say to the chair that it's an affiliate of COSATU, we're having a congress in a week's time, and not less than 6 resolutions going to the congress of COSATU on energy, solar water heaters, renewables. So I think there is a seriousness with which this is being approached. From where we're sitting, I mean, just maybe to emphasize the point that was made in the presentation, we have a World Cup-based research group, which brings people from 6 energy-intensive users. And the Department of Energy came there and spoke about the flagship programs of industrial energy efficiency programs. And I don't think that they were aware. In there, they were sitting people from the Asian Pilatin, ArcelorMittal, Score Metals, and all of that. And they said, these are flagships. And we turned around and said, look, comrade, do you know about the flagship program? And all the shopkeepers didn't know about this flagship program. And we think that it's important, you know, if there is a program, and there are this flagship for people to be involved. A few points there. You mentioned whether the things come to NetLink. Yes, the IRP came to NetLink, but the energy efficiency stuff, I mean, I think the point that was made, what the department referred to is the communication strategy of energy efficiency, not the details of it. They wanted to discuss the communication strategy. We don't think that, you know, this NetLink a toy telephone, you know, you just take all the soft issues. So that's what I think we raised. IPEP, and I just want to make an example about what we think is happening. We have been saying that some of these renewable energy technologies must be designated. They haven't been designated. We've been involved in discussion through the project steering committee on solar water heaters and the rollout of that. And in the last few weeks, before there is now an agreement on a contract model, scaling up of program, we are seeing many municipalities rolling out quick tenders to circumvent what would be a much more stringent way of rolling out this solar water heater. And next few weeks, I think we're going to see headlines of taking one municipality to court because, you know, they violated everything to put this program. So I think we we hear that this is to circumvent the sort of designation that says some of what's used in the program must be locally produced. Just to Baba Lucas, now just the last point about the price and comparison. I mean, we have said the manufacturer of solar water here. It's quite clear. I mean, we've gone through the actual unit and said what can we produce here, what is comparable with China. It's clear we can't compete with China on the cube. And the union will agree, look, because of the scale, look, that part will be important. But the panels and other parts, they are competitive. So it's not that, you know, we're just saying, look, just, you know, do everything here. We've done studies to say, look, on this one, we can compete. On this one, clearly we've got to import. And that exercise, and I think some of what we're seeing now is to try and but people run companies from the boots of their cars and just import all the stuff to do this. So Professor Krobler and Professor Sia, I mean, we are quite keen to train a layer of software who can participate in meaningfully with the energy manager. Unfortunately, the General Electric people are gone. Anyway, the one is the nephew of mine. Because the problem with some of the equipment is that the people who operate it must also understand the rationale behind that. And we've been struggling to find the institutions that can train this layer of shop stewards that can sit in meetings and discuss with energy matters. And energy strategy, when we were promised there's going to be a review, we said, look, there must be energy committee on the shop floor, and that employees must participate in those to make meaningful competition. That's what we will be looking for.
Professor Shia, I know still on the line, Professor Hawk. If you could just be there, Professor Shia.
Yeah, I have
my first
time to be in the park.
Microphone, please. I said it was my first time to speak in Parliament, and then at lunch I said I wish to join you guys as a Parliament member. But then I should answer that there's a long, long way to go. So it's not going to happen that I will speak here overnight. So that's why I'm not as inching. I want to... No, we invite you again.
So I heard, because early in the morning, we heard so many numbers. So 12%, you mentioned in the National Energy Efficiency Strategy. I think we've got another number we can easily convert that into a percentage. 3,000 megawatt in 20 years. Maybe in 20 years' time, we're talking to 2%. I think we also LG also mentioned 38%. And then I got the chance to talk to, I mentioned the Lawrence Berkeley Lab. You know, I know one of the professors, he published a paper in International Average Tribune. He said, in buildings, we can save up to 80%. I think that, what are these numbers? Can we make some sense of this? I know that some of these numbers are sense up. I think it's 15%
was rational.
LJ gave an example of Germany, because if we ask ourselves which other countries which are most energy efficient, it's got to be Germany or Japan. I think I can give you another example. I heard it from some of the companies. Japan last year, they got 30% of nuclear fuel. This year, 30% is completely out of the equation. The country is still running. And then we say Japan is more energy efficient than South Africa. That means that South Africa, we can save more. So then at least 30% or 38%. But can we go to 80%? So what if it's 2% or 12% or tax incentive 15%? I think I don't like the IRP. I think I'm now speaking on my business here. I don't want to reflect the business and energy efficiency half the business. But one thing I like the IRP is, the IRP is the only document that I read which recognizes energy efficiency as a national resource. If it is a national resource, it is our wealth. Then we must evaluate how much do we have in total. And then, where are we? So I would say, I think that I can take all these numbers as good numbers. 2% open cost mark. It's low hanging fruit. 10% out of that, 12%.
1 minute to go.
38% is something that we prove to be mineable. 80% is something that we need to find out. So I think, in summary, my take is that all these stakeholders, MERSA, academic, the parliament, should work together. Just get a clear idea of what the country has in terms of energy efficiency resources, and what is the cost of mining resources.
Professor Kompla? Thank you, Chair. Now you've answered half of my answer, so thanks for that. But just for me to follow on the 38%, I think the important thing that we need to decide in the country, and as Shia said, 2-3%, 5%, whatsoever, 38%, you know, we need to look at what we need to do in total to stay competitive with the world. Because what's happening internationally, companies internationally, the figure that's also there is, you need to improve your overall efficiency by around 60% before you can really cost-effectively convert to a low-carbon economy. Otherwise, you will continue to use renewable energy that's very expensive to drive waste. And I think that is the debate that we need to enter into if we're looking at these figures. Below that, aren't we just meter-gressing to say we are doing it and keep everybody happy? And that is the challenge that's out there. Technically, it can be done. That's no problem. So if we want to go, I've over-elaborated on Germany. But Germany is working towards zero energy buildings, which means on an annual basis, the buildings will consume zero energy. That's where they go. Their aims are to have the first zero energy building within the next 5 years, therefore going towards legislation, regulation, enforcing zero energy buildings. Okay, they acknowledge they're still 10, 15 years from there. But that's where they go. So technically, it can be done. And I think the important thing is also, when we look at this 38%, just asking on then I'll go to the other side. We need to start challenging the status quo on how we do it. I'm going to just do it with a simple example to show you the effect. If we look at the South African environment, we might use electric heating mainly for hot water, our electric heaters that we all talk about now, as we saw that. Now, if you look at the overall efficiency for electric geyser, if you look at electric geyser, it's fairly efficient, 99%. Electricity in, hot water out. But if you look at that system efficiency, from the power station, from coal to the geyser, where we get hot water out, the overall efficiency is 22%. It means 78% of all the energy that burns in the coals in the power station is lost as heat before it ends up in hot water in my house. Now, if you go to those old donkeys, remember those old donkeys that you use to make the fire underneath the drum? Now, our old donkey, the efficiency of it is around 45%. That old inefficiency. So if we convert, I'm not preaching this, I'm bringing over the concept here. If we convert all electric geysers in the country to a donkey, we're going to save 50% of all the energy currently being used to heat hot water for residential use. We're also going to save 50% of the emissions doing it. The only thing is we're going to localize the emissions, but currently it's only at the power station. But what I mean is we need to think about these things completely different. And that is the challenge that we need to look at. If we start looking at that, that is the thing. So the challenge therefore is technically possible. We need to decide why, where we want, how we want to utilize our natural resource, as Shah said, in terms of taking energy efficiency forward. It's a massive natural resource that we can do.
And take on that thing, the issue, for example, and that is just my view how we should look at it, we're looking at the integrated approach. If you look at production, local production, we say we can't compete with China. But if we look at it and say, okay, let's set up this whole program integrated with the social grant program, where people get social grants because they don't have work. If you take that amount of money, some of those, convert that into a social grant where people get that grant that is part of the work of producing these energy efficiency technologies, it will cost us more and we are going to deliver those products. I think those are the kind of things we need to start looking at it. Why can't we utilize social grants to the same person, but now he's being paid to do something that adds value in energy efficiency? And I think if we look at that integrated example, suddenly I think we're going to have a total different financial business case on the table, and we will suddenly start to compete with China as well out of that. And I think that is an important thing to do, look on it. Just a couple of them, just going to run, I'm just going to run quickly through a few of the other points mentioned. On the reporting side, mandatory reporting, I think it's very important that we also lower mandatory reporting up to the end user level. So the companies need to mandatory report. That's a common thing already happening internationally. The listed companies, listed on the London Stock Exchange, listed in New York, they have to report their carbon. They need to disclose their carbon. They need to already do these things. So it's something that companies are already used to. I think if we bring that into the mix, that's not only listed companies, up from a certain point upwards, if you use so much energy, it has to be disclosed. I think that is what we're looking at it in terms of that. Then there's a question, and let's actually answer it, the question, Eskom, utility, are they promoting energy efficiency? They're doing a pretty good job. But the bottom line is still they're selling electricity. And they make their money out of selling electricity. So they will always favor things that will be more in the interest. It's not that they are against national policy and against that, but they will favor more things. And if you look at the history on the DSM program, what happened is the initial projects were all load shifting projects because we were demand constrained. And only when we ran into an energy constrained environment did Eskom really start favoring energy efficiency projects. And those pressure internally might change as new power stations come in and on. The utility will always look at energy efficiency, but from their perspective. And we need to acknowledge it. Also, it's a business. No matter, although it's a state-owned business, that's the way it will happen. So we will need to take cognizance of that. And then 12I, 12L, the incentives. Okay, why? Okay, 12I is the first energy efficiency incentive, but it's not only energy efficiency incentive. It's more a job creation incentive where efficiency is by the way. And that is one of the reasons also, and only for massive projects, job creation, expansion projects, greenfield and brownfield. So that's why big projects take many years to get off the ground. But it's going there. But 12L, the first time announced in Parliament when Minister Trevor Manuel was still Minister of Finance. It's still not out. So, you know, that is a bit frustration for industry because from their point of view also everything that they do now, indication of they will never get that benefit. So from their point, what's now happening is industry are waiting for 12L because if they implement, they will not get the incentive. Now they're waiting for the incentive. But the incentive doesn't come, so everybody's waiting for everybody.
That's the mind of
12L. 12L is the energy overall basic energy efficiency initiative, where you will get a rebate or incentive for every kilowatt hour saved and proven. And that will go across the globe. So basically for all commercial industrial projects.
Shall I remember to keep tabs on that?
And, and the nice thing about the system is we think it's a very nice self-governing system because the onus is on the end user to prove. And through then the system, through Sunday, to everybody, they need to prove. So it's a self-regulatory thing. So that if the regulator or the group who are responsible for regulating and SARS are not happy, they will say, prove to us that you say it. So I think it is a very good thought-through system that has been designed, and it's something that we really need to push through and get implemented. The benefit of that to the country will be enormous going that way. And then just the last one, in terms of who are the groups, companies associated with the FAE, we have universities, we have banks, we have TIA, the Technology Innovation Agency, we have companies, end users, equipment suppliers, so it's already quite a mix. We don't have all the state departments already involved in the association. We would love to have more of them involved in the process. Because in the end, it's a complex issue. We need to debate all of this going forward.
You don't have civil society as well.
Yeah?
You don't have organized civil society as well.
No, we don't.
You do?
Yeah, we should. We should. Then there's just my apologies for not including the workers. They are the people that make the difference, because every switch, it's not the energy managers that manage energy, it's the end users, it's the people on the ground that make. That's why it's so important to have the unions and everybody involved on that. And our approach on new careers are exactly, we looked at exactly the chartered accountants and what they've done. I think that's an excellent model to actually use and build on that. So it's not something that we need to develop from scratch. The chartered accountant model works very well. And the important thing, taking this back, and this is an important thing that we need to bring over on energy. Having an energy efficiency program without a proper measurement and verification initiative around it is like driving your company or a company without a financial accounting system. If you have no idea what you're really saving, you cannot manage energy. And that is a very important thing. You cannot implement those projects. And that is often why some of these fail. Because not doing proper measurement and verification, I have the perception that a project is financially feasible or not feasible, and the other way around. And that is a crucial thing on energy efficiency. Having proper measurement and verification in place that can drive you through. Because things are changing. Your tariffs are changing. And the problem what happens is chartered accountants, financial guys, look at the account and they say, well, we spent millions on these projects and our account still went up. So we wasted our money. But if measurement and verification is properly done, you will show them, look, you spent millions, your account went up, but if you didn't do it, it would have gone up 3 times or whatever the value is because of tariff increases, increased production, hot years, cold years, whatever it was. And that's the importance that needs to bring out on that side. And then, just the last one, energy managers in the country, and the comments around that. There are quite a lot of companies who are already doing, specifically companies on the energy intensive user group. There are some of them who have managed actively. They have energy managers that are employed. Going down to the smaller industries, it will be difficult financially. A good example here is the property industry. The property industry has told us many times, we cannot afford, property is a commodity actually, because there's so many buildings, everybody's competing against it. So we cannot really afford to bring in energy managers in our property and create new posts. But you don't need to have that always that you bring in new posts. And that's where the debate is. Is energy management an occupation or is it a skill? And there are two views. There are certain views that, no, we must make it totally. It's a new occupation. Now, there is room for a new occupation in the big energy intensive groups. But let's put it in the smaller industries where we're sitting with a lot of people creating having effect on energy. It's actually the market is financially is too small to bring in new energy managers. But in that instance, it should be a skill, because the best person who can implement energy efficiency in the, for example, property industry is a facility manager. Because if he is also skilled in energy management, every single decision that he will make, whenever he makes it, whether it's a cleaning decision, or whether it's a paint decision, or whether it's a box replacement decision, or whatever it is, he will also make it from the background of proper energy management. He's the best guy to do it, and it will actually then become just natural business as usual. And I think that is that debate. We, you know, there are two views, my view is we could, it's not only an occupation or only a skill. It is both, depending on which industry you are. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I trust and hope that as you feel going out, there will be a snuggling or a partnership between the energy efficiency, UP, NUMSA, and Northwest for training the future. Thank you, because what I had was much around high-level training. Whereas if we target, for example, community activity, right in the townships, in the rural areas, and anywhere, and then for that matter, in the suburbs, and on one side, but also shop jobs on the other side, who I think actually is very influential in the rest of the website. You know, that's saying, making sure that there are some basic certificates, you know, whether it's 3 months, 6 weeks, whatever. Down the line, so if you put in a monitoring and evaluation process, you start realizing some. I don't know how much, but I have that confidence. Honourable Member, I think today we had the balancing booth from state-owned enterprises, experts, universities and others. I wish I could say business, because it's only companies that came. It would have been helpful if your NBI boosters and whoever could have been here as well. Of course, the energy intensive users group was here, but also the other categories would have been very, very helpful, as well as civil society organizations. I know the faith communities couldn't make it for today, unfortunately. They could have given us a different flavor. SALGA is having a special national conference. That could have been very helpful, because no matter what you say, when you say government, as the president said recently, government, the major conspiracy, you don't say government and equate that to national department, that's not government. So it would have been very helpful to have had a SACA, so that we can hear from them what have they done. Just in fact, they gave us just one glimpse of it. So at the end of the day, you know, as Professor Salka said, you know, it's a paradigm shift. How to make the sector a reality. And if you link this to that, with what NASA said, the benefits, whether economic, environmental, or social, and even sustainability of supply, it therefore means that we definitely need to be seen with the how do we ensure the paradigm shift becomes a reality. What's the genuine future now? Well, surely there must be a multi-stakeholder engagement. Surely there must be, so that's a stakeholder engagement, multidisciplinary and a comprehensive approach taking into account all sectors, even though they have not been raised yet, because much has been around in the electricity. Institutional arrangements, honorable phrasing, are seem to be an issue that comes strongly, because everybody has got something to say about sales, about NED, about this and that, about skill training. But I'm sure in terms of members of Parliament as well, I would like to see something that's coherent. I'm not convinced that I'm thinking of anything that's coherent. Everyone is doing something good, you know. Maybe a naive question is that, what happened to the National Energy Efficiency Agency? Why didn't it, blossom into, a formidable initiative? If, a target of 38%, energy efficiency is something that's globally verifiable, I take it as an aspect, you've checked that with your peers, so I'll rely on it. So, amongst other things that we need to be addressing, and for us as the committee, can I undertake the community sector? We'll have to look for some research support. We don't have to research that. But yes, from February to now, it's a fight, but we need to collect all the information, bring it back to you and see. You know, how to concretize our journey forward. But obviously, our end game is to
catalyze a number of recommendations and take them to the department for their consideration. Surely, we expect that to influence the revised strategy, and we will still engage on it, and I'm sure all in front of that, I guess, thanks very much. As I say, it's been a success step of the journey, but with all the influence from Professor Sobe, now that for all your things, unfortunately, we will have to work together very strongly forward. Thanks very much, all of the members. Thanks, everybody. The meeting is adjourned.